Hello, everyone. My name is Dio Morales, your host of the Gold Squadron Podcast. We're coming to you live from episode 142 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. And today, I'm joined by Marcel Buyakasha Manzano.
It's Buyakasha.
You didn't like the way I said it? I wasn't good enough for you?
Ali G. Yes, you gotta...
This is how I talk. Wow. Man.
Better.
How about this? So you said Buyakasha, like that, like more
that's
aggressive.
Better. It's better. Improvement.
Okay, yeah. I'm trying. I'm working on it. And Ryan won with the marmosets. Stanisuski.
I am. They're all around me at all times, looking through GoPros and looking inquisitive at your camera.
For the people who don't know, what is a marmoset? I'm totally not one of those.
It's a tiny monkey. It's a type of like ape monkey thing. They've seen it on previous last episode, two episodes ago. We had the question episode, and there was one that had dealt with marmosets.
Oh, I forgot. I didn't remember. Sometimes these episodes, man, they just go in and out of my brain. Mm-hmm. But I see. All right, we have reference material now. We're good. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for listening, watching. I don't know. Are there any other options besides that? Listening, watching, feeling, loving, whatever feels good.
We got to upgrade to smelling.
Smell-o-vision. 2022. Okay? That's a goal. As for announcements, if you guys saw on our wait screen, or maybe you guys are listening, next Wednesday in 2 days, is going to be Thai Baron Day. The Thai Fireball Day was a resounding success. If you were watching last Wednesday, let me know in the chat, because I know we had an awesome time, absolutely awesome time flying the fireballs. Unfortunately, the fireballs did go 0-3. That happens. But, you know, maybe they'll come around again and you have another chance. But this weekend, we have the Thai Baron. And before I actually forget, people are wondering, where's William? Where's William? He's just not available today. It happens. But we got us three. We'll make it through. We'll take a moment of silence for Will. All right, we're good. So yeah, Thai Baron Day this Wednesday. Make sure that you do that. We have the following Wednesday's themed planned, I think, as well. Idea from Marcel Manzano. We're going to be doing so this Wednesday is Thai Baron week, and the Wednesday after that is going to be Hot Shots and Aces week one. Since there's so many new pilots in there and a lot of them that haven't been explored, we're going to take the opportunity to start exploring them. As for a Patreon update, I don't have anything solid. I have a bunch of what are these words called? Sketches coming in, and it's just really dependent on who gets done first. And maybe next week I'll give you guys a little tease and preview. I gave the guys a preview of one of them. Stuff's looking good, right, guys?
Yep, can agree. Looking great.
Pause. Yes, excellent. The faith restored.
I mean, we can't say too much.
That's right. You're right. All right. Well, today's topic is one that I've wanted to talk about for a while. I think it's important, and I think it applies to all players. So the name of this episode is going to be how to set yourself up for success for tournament day. And this is whether you are a beginner, a mid-level player, or consider yourself a tournament-going veteran. And I would like to address all of the levels, because we have people of all those levels showing up to tournaments. We're about to turn the corner, or we've started already the store championship season. We got the system opens happening. The X-Wing season is starting to ramp up, a lot more events happening. So I want to make sure we talk about this stuff. And I think the first thing we need to ask we're beginning our agenda here, is are you ready to go to a tournament? And I figured what we start by doing is giving the official expectations from FFG that are put out. I will tell you that their expectations are technically out of date because they use some of the old terminology, but we'll be using some pared down and correct terminology. So I'll go ahead and get started here. Let's talk about the relaxed tier. So the relaxed tier states, tournaments at this level are welcoming to all players regardless of experience level. The relaxed tier is for store championship level events. So that's the relaxed tier. Ryan, what about the formal tier?
So the formal tier, we have this tournament level expects players to possess at least a minimal amount of experience. Players should be familiar with the game rules and be prepared to exercise that knowledge to play at a reasonable pace. The focus is a friendly competitive environment. The formal tier is used for prime championships / regionals.
And Marcel, the premier events.
Muted. All right, so the premier events. Premier events are the highest level of competition for Fantasy Flight Games. Tournaments such as Hyperspace Cup, Grand Championships.
Oh, no, you're not supposed to read you're not supposed to read the yellow. That's false. False. Try again.
You wrote it down there. Okay,
it's yellow because it's wrong. That's the outdated verbiage. Start again. Premier events.
Premier events. Fantasy Flight Games tournaments such as not Hyperspace Cups, Grand Championships, System Opens, World Championship level events. The I don't think you have it on there, but the Gen Con and Euros, whatever those are called.
Those are Grand Championships.
No, they're not. Grand Championships are like Nova, LVO, and St. Louis's Grand Championship.
Okay.
The other ones are called Continental Championships.
Yeah. We'll call those World Championship level.
They're Continental Championship level.
Continental. There.
That's not how...
That's angry typing.
Yes.
Anyway, players should be familiar not only with the game rules, but also with the most recent FAQ and tournament regulations. The focus is on competitive and fair environments.
So the reason I wanted to give the official expectations is just to kind of, we have a baseline for us to start this conversation. Now, I kind of want to start with the premier expectations and go backwards, because one thing that I tend to tell people a lot of times is, you know, if you want to really get into this game and get a lot of experience and learn really quickly, you should start going to tournaments, regardless of the level, honestly. We're going to talk about how to set yourself up for success for that, but I know that some people might read the description of the premier level and say, oh my God, that seems like really out of touch. But I feel like as a community, the community expectations are different regardless of the level of expectations. Like, at least for what I have seen and experienced, that there are some expectations there, but they're a lot simpler. You know, we can get rid of all the fancy verbiage. You know what your ships do, like your personal list. And even if you don't, be flexible and willing to take correction if you found out that, hey, you know, I've been playing Kitchen Table X-Wing and turns out this ability that I thought worked one way doesn't work that way. Of course, politely ask a judge to confirm if your opponent's like, I don't think that works that way. And if you come across somebody, be like, hey, that doesn't work that way. Let's get a judge just to explain it for you. That way you don't have to believe me. You know, showing up to your table on time. I'm not sure who put that in there, but that's a great one. A great one. Just when you're actually at an event, make sure you show up. And playing as clean as possible. Just, I think what it comes down to is, like, as long as you're moving the ships from point A to point B in a relatively neat manner. I'm not necessarily talking about the way, you know, like, clean as in, like, the play space. Because, you know, we've all seen Marcel Mondano playing on stream. And his stuff goes everywhere. The whole game. But he plays a clean game when it comes to the ships themselves, right? You make sure that you have your templates in all the way. Make sure your barrel rolls are clean, your boosts, all that stuff. What other things in addition?
Actually, do keep the table clean. Because, I do have a very messy table, and I know where everything's at. But there's plenty of time that a judge will come over, and we're you know, asking for a art check or something. And they'll say, like, oh, is this stress? Like, oh, no, that's just leftover. And I know, and my opponent knows, but, yeah, the judge will ask us to clean it up. So, yeah, just that's just, yeah, that's keep play clean, but also keep a clean visibility, and keep everything exposed, everything visible. So Dion doesn't get angry when you pull a heroic card out of the back because it was hiding behind something else.
That's right, Kayla. You can hear me. I know you can. Ryan, anything else, like, community expectations-wise, that you think, regardless of the level, you just think is important for somebody going to the tournament, maybe even for the first time, should be thinking about?
So I think one thing that is important is, especially as first time, getting an early feel of actually talking to the judges often at tournaments is a good thing. And one reason to be doing that is if either A, you're not sure about an interaction and it hasn't been cleared up by anybody, or B, maybe it has been cleared up by somebody, but you've heard conflicting rulings from other events, or C, you and your opponent in the middle of a game, like, you have obviously conflicting things on how the trigger is working. Ideally, you want to try and ask a judge about that before the event happens. So, you know, going in, if you have a certain trigger or you think something will come up that could cause a solid game stoppage and you want to try to avoid that early, go up, talk to a judge, talk about some rules you have questions on. Maybe it's not even directly about your list. Maybe you have a friend that's coming here for the first time and you want to help that friend understand their interactions. Help them out. Go get a judge, get them in front of them, get them talking, and make sure everything is as clear as possible and as early on as you can.
Love it. Love it. So now, after we, you know, we talked about community expectations, let's go ahead and talk about goal setting. Because I know a lot of people, you know, and this is just like a life thing, right? You go into something and sometimes, you know, you didn't set either a goal at all or a realistic goal, and you end up either floundering, feeling lost, or just kind of overwhelmed in general. So let's go talk about some realistic goal setting, and we're going to talk about different levels depending where you are. So I'm going to go ahead and hit the beginner. So if you're brand new, right, whether you're, I'm going to consider, let me tell you what I consider a beginner. A beginner is somebody who is either like, fresh, like you brand new to the game, or this is your first tournament. So that is a long, that's a lot of range. You could have been playing this game for years, but if you've never been to a tournament before, sometimes things work a little bit different in the tournament world versus, you know, even your game store or playing at home. And remember, we're focusing today on tournaments specifically, how to set up yourself for success. So now, first thing is your expectations. I think number one, you need to go in there and your goal should be to learn new strategy. Learn something. Leave the tournament a better X-Wing player than you left. That's honestly advice that any X-Wing player can go into. But I think that is the number one thing that a new player needs to be going in for. Next, you should be, your goal should be to experience new lists and new play styles. If you've had a very small exposure to X-Wing, you haven't seen anything outside your local store, maybe you haven't watched streams and YouTube games, and you haven't really just seen what's there, hey, it's time to experience more of the game that exists. And then, of course, to meet new people, make friends. The X-Wing community is an awesome group of people. If you're at a premier event, most likely you're going to see me there. If you're not comfortable talking to anybody else, come say hi. I'll at least give you a high five. Just if I'm underneath a table taping down wires, just give me a minute before you come say hi. I'd appreciate it. But overall, you might notice, right, that's what I have there for beginners. You notice I didn't talk anything about number of wins, about, you know, trying to kill ships or anything like that. Your goal is not to win when you're a beginner, when you're starting. Your goal is to play the game with new people. That's it. All right? Get experience, learn, and start to get comfortable with it. You can, if you go 0-6, but you picked up more knowledge, you feel like a better X-Wing player at the end, even if you got your butt kicked, you know, 0 to 200 every game, you've won. Your tournament experience has been positive because you come out a better X-Wing player. That if that tournament came out again, you'd have more knowledge, you'd maybe make some different moves than you did before, and start, you know, ramping up for success and heading towards that mid-level competitive tier. Marcel, what do you think about mid-level competitive? You know, they've been to a few tournaments. Maybe they've been able to win a few games here and then. Like, what should they be doing to set realistic goals?
Well, first, just understanding the basics, like what are you flying? You know, what type of list are you flying? Are you faction locked, or is it? And I'm reading off your notes, and I'm trying to go off of your notes, but so I'm going to go off of your notes.
No, riff, man, riff. Go for it.
Of that. But yeah, you have in there whether you did a homebrew or a meta. I think more than anything, if you're a mid-level player, define a mid-level player. Actually, let me start by saying
you
that.
Want me to define a mid-level player. So
yeah,
a mid.
So I know, like what. What is a? How do you define a mid-level player?
Well, so I said you've been to a few tournaments. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have some tournament experience. You've been able to maybe get one to three wins mm-hmm. at a tournament that has six rounds.
Sure.
Okay, so maybe you know a 20 to 50% win rate at a mm-hmm. tournament.
Okay, and you're going and you're trying to get to more wins.
You're trying to get to that next level.
Yeah, I think for that, really, it goes for me, and I'm just trying to think back, like when I was trying to like make it to the cuts, and I wasn't originally making it to the cuts, is really just having enough reps with what I had flown before, and just more than anything else, remembering my triggers is, and it's even something that I struggle with now. It's remembering all my triggers all the time, is just remembering the triggers, remembering to stay calm, and just really trying not to get too cute. Understand what your list does. Understand what they do, and don't try to be too cute with things. You know, your first instinct is usually the right instinct. So don't go back and forth like, oh, I you know, you have a two bank and then, you know, to the left, and then go back and switch it to the two right. And then you see your opponent make, you know, play with their dial a little bit. And then you go back and you switch it again and keep second guessing yourself. Is really just stick to your plan. Play your game. The opponent's going to play their game, and just try to conserve a little bit of energy by not overthinking things, not getting too worked up about things, and just relax, enjoy your game, and see how that plays out. I think for the mid and the veteran level players, more than what happens at the actual tournament, it's what happens before the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know you have listed there of what to do, but during the actual tournament, I think the main things is remember your triggers and play your game. Don't second guess yourself. One of the things that I struggle with, especially when flying something new, for example, at Adepticon, I always tend to bring a list that's pretty wacky. I don't know why Adepticon's always been my bring something silly tournament.
Because you get to sleep in your own bed?
Probably. But that one time I took like a TIE Swarm with a bomber. One of the things that happened is after like the fifth or sixth game, I just got tired, fatigued, and I started forgetting, like, oh, I forgot to drop a bomb, I forgot to do this, and just started to lose interest. And I think that happens through fatigue. Like if you're overly concentrated the first three or four rounds, that takes energy. So you're gonna burn yourself out. So by the time you get to the fifth, sixth, seventh round, you're going to be done. Your brain's going to be fried. You're going to like, you know, whatever. Let me just throw this down. So I think that's just keeping it easy, keeping calm, keeping hydrated. Eat. Make sure you sleep the night before. Eat. Have enough fluids in you. Ideally, alcohol is not coming until later after you've been eliminated. So get enough actual H2O in you. And then just... Yeah, don't second guess yourself, and don't try to overdo. Don't try to get too cute, because when you try to get too cute, especially if that happens every single turn, by the time the fourth, fifth round come around, you're just gonna be burnt out. Your mind's gonna be is gonna be on a, like, I don't know how to say it, but you'll be done. At least that's what happens to me typically.
You know, a couple other points just kind of come to mind here for mid-level. I think one thing I think is important to note for some people, similar to the beginners, and just an idea that I want to revolve here, is sometimes we got to be okay with not being able to win or not being able to go up to the next level. So, for instance, if you're a person who doesn't get to play a lot, but you get to go to tournaments, you're like, hey, I get to go to two tournaments, a year or something like that. So you might have gone to quite a few tournaments, but you don't have a local league night, or you're not able to play on Vassal all the time and do all that stuff. Sometimes you got to be okay and understand, like, hey, I had fun playing my games. I was able to get my 2 to 3 wins, if that, and I'm just there to play the game. But I think, you know, if somebody is trying to go up, something else that they need to be able to do is to be able to objectively critique their own games. Because I find that this level, especially if player, has the tendency that it's my dice a lot. You know, if you can't go through 6 games, have and think about your losses, and every single one you say, my dice, like, they do happen. We've seen them. I have commentated enough games to say, dice won that game, or dice swung that game really, really hard in one person's direction or another. But I have also commentated games where it wasn't the dice, it was decision making, but then the player, you know, the only part they remember, which I understand, is the part, it is the most emotionally, you know, the part that you emotionally remember is the dice, because those are just very clear moments of when things go bad. But being able to objectively critique your games will start, increasing your level of understanding of the game. Just be able to say, like, hey, this was a bad move because I overextended my ship. You know, I had a swarm, and instead of, you know, being able to have them all in range, I was out of range, or, you know, my opponent was able to put me in a position where they were picking off one ship at a time, things of that sort. If you can't objectively critique your games, or you're bad at it, that is something that I think you need to start doing. And even if you do have a squad, you know, have the agreement with your opponents, with your friends, that saying, hey, after this game, let's talk about it. Even if it goes bad, let's talk about it and how each of us could have done better. I think those are really good and important conversations to have in order for a play group to get better and, not just lose a game and feel salty, which can happen. I get it. Sometimes things go bad. But being able to do that. And then one kind of really practical line I like to tell people, and that I've been thinking about lately, is your expectations. Another way you could look at it going into it is, like, all right, let's say you are in your playgroup, like, let's call it an average playgroup, you tend to win 80% of your games, right? So 80% of wins at a 6-0 or a 6-round event, that's 4 to 5 games. Let's call it 4 wins, right? I like to say kind of local practice minus 1. So if in your local, without, you know, playing any other players, you get 4 to 5 wins and you haven't gone to a tournament before, or you rarely get to go to tournaments, you know, maybe expect 1 less there for a realistic goal. And then you got that stretch goal of being able to, be a monster. But of course, if you're practicing with, you know, super high level players, that may not necessarily apply to you. I'm talking about the average Joe or Jane out there. Anyway, let's continue here. The veteran level. Ryan, let's talk about those tournament warriors, those players whose names we're hearing all the time. But even that they have preparation and realistic goals that they need to set. What are some things maybe that they're doing in order to prep for that? Just go ahead. It's on you.
So the first thing veteran player, and any, obviously this could apply to any player, needs to decide, are you here to just play and enjoy the event, because you've been to a lot of events. So maybe you already got your Worlds invite, or you're not super crazy about all the prizes. You're just there to play. Or are you there to win? Are you going there to say, I'm doing everything I can within the rules completely? I'm just making
right,
it clear.
Right.
Everything you can to win within the rules. And to make that decision, because some veteran players do just go to events just to play and have fun and then just go out for the best part of X-Wing weekend afterwards, right? Like, we've all, a lot of us have been there.
Yep.
Which, by the way, like, seriously, whatever level player you are, I have never seen anyone get shunned out of joining us for fun after events for restaurants. There's so many that I go to, please join us. It's a lot of fun.
No, you're not allowed.
That's when we're allowed to drink. So big parts of getting to, if you're deciding that I am here to win. Okay. So what do you define as win? Do you define a win for the weekend as making cut? Do you define win as getting your Worlds invite, whatever level event that may be? If it's a regional, that means you're winning the whole thing. If it's a system open, that means you're going for top eight. Are you there for a certain prize? Are you there for templates? Are you there for dice? Some people, these veteran players have been around long enough that there's certain prizes they're only gunning for. And then everything on that is gravy. Me personally, I'm always a make cut and everything past that is gravy. If I keep that as a mindset, I'm not putting too much pressure on myself, which is something veteran players sometimes do. They're used to winning a lot to the degree where they feel like if they go to event and like they don't do so as well as their like super high goal, it can feel pretty bad. So I'm personally someone who, I don't look to set insanely high goals. I would strive, like, I'm getting that kind of feeling, I'm getting that itch. I want to win another event soon. Like, it's been a bit. It's been a couple years. I'm like, I'd like to make another big splash. But you know what? I'm still trying to keep it low, only going for cut. Everything's gravy. So going into there, use the tools out there in the data collection from people like Chris Allen, from List Fortress, your advanced targeting computer website. Talk with the judge community. Prep with the tools available out there so that you know going in and the things you expect to be there. Right now, most people expect Boba is a meta force for hyperspace. And people need to make sure that they are practicing around that barometer. Do you have an answer for Boba? You don't need a pure counter for Boba, but do you have an answer? Do you have a plan? Do you have a strategy? Do you understand what matchups, and are you okay with punting certain matchups, saying, I'm going to take care of this area of the meta. If this one matchup shows up, it's going to be really hard, but I'll deal with that. And I'll just say, you know what? I may not get all the matchups in this area, but it's going to be much harder to get that one to beat me. Got to have multiple openings. This is something I even need to work on too. Especially with Separatists, because they're so locked into a certain opening, you got to have multiple plans. In case you see someone who maybe just says, because everyone's so used to lining up in a corner, and someone's going to line up on the opposite corner. Sometimes you might find that someone who lines up completely straight across from you and says, I'm ready to joust.
What do I do? Wait, I don't get to do, I don't have plan.
you may not have done the math because their squad is not as familiar. I ran into that in Worlds in top 32. I deployed in the wrong corner initially anyway, but he just lined up on the other joust and I'm like, I don't know if I should go at this. I'm going to err on the side of no. Still wrong anyway. Multiple openings are really helpful to make sure that you have as many flexible things to attack from and react to. And then like have strategies and test to other list barometers. Look at all the factions and say, what am I most likely to see from this faction? Resistance, probably 2 to 3 A-wings, multiple T-70s. Rose is powerful. Kaz, we've seen, is expected to be utilized. Kova. With Republic, multiple Jedi, maybe an N1, maybe a broadside. Just find those meta pieces that you expect those factions to use and build a list that you would probably bring to an event, but you're not, and fight against it. Or find that friend that is bringing, like, what you believe to be a meta or good staple in that faction. And have those barometer matchups. Make sure that you feel comfortable, or at least have a plan that you feel can be executed in a consistent manner. Don't find that weird niche wombo combo unless that's literally your only thing you can do against, say, like a matchup you're going to punt to. And then, you know, as a veteran player's increasing in their time and skills in the game, you know, you can make those goals higher. I just personally stay away from setting them too high, because it's really hard for one to win a whole event. It's hard. That is for anybody to do. It's hard to consistently make top cuts deep in them. Like, there's a lot of people that make cut and lose first round. It just happens, because mathematically there's more people that can lose in round one than there is in round two of an elimination bracket. So making it deep in a bracket of elimination, that's still hard anyone to do. So there's plenty of veteran players that sometimes don't make cut or make cut and lose first round, but that's why setting those goals really high. If you want to do it, cool. Just I wouldn't be really down on yourself if you don't make those goals all the time, because they're super hard to accomplish on a consistent basis.
Excellent. Now let's go ahead and talk about pre-tournament prep. So before the tournament is started, what can you do to ensure, or at least give yourself a better chance of being successful? You know, hitting those goals that we talked about for each of those levels. For the beginners, we talked about it a little bit already, is knowing your abilities. Just being able to, like, memorize the card text, or at least have the idea of, all right, I know I am flying, you know, Howl Runner with some TIE fighters. I know that everybody at range 0 to 1 of her can reroll an attack die. You know, just that very basic idea of making sure that you know your stuff, your things that you brought with you before you start gaming. And then I think, because you are coming to a tournament, if you want to do some very basic research to at least be aware of what might be popular at that event, a very easy thing to do, you got the tool right here, Gold Squadron Podcast, our YouTube channel. We have literally the largest library of X-Wing games in the world. Just look at, what was the last event? Look it up. You can look at our schedule. All right, !! Events. What's on the schedule? All right, the last thing they were at was at Texas, and they had LVO a couple weeks earlier. Let me look at the finals of both of those, because you know what's going to happen? A big chunk of players are going to look at what are those lists in the finals, and they're going to fly them. That is just something that happens all the time. Will you see other lists? Of course you will. But if you want something fast and an easy way to look up, like, 3 to 4 lists that we might see, look at those two, you know, the last two major event championship or runner-up lists. That'll just give you an idea of what's coming in. Read what the lists are. Look up the cards. And then, at least going in, you have a knowledge of a high percentage of things that you might run into, giving you some confidence, some knowledge before you actually hit the table. Marcel, what about those mid-level folks?
All right, so mid-level folks, folks that have been winning a few games, what are trying to break that threshold to start making cuts is, start off with the same as you said. Look at the past couple events, see what was, but dig a little deeper instead of just seeing what's in the final table. Dig a little deeper, see what's in the top 8. Go look at List Juggler and see what's in the top 16, what made cut. One of the things that often gets overlooked is what actually won Swiss. So maybe, you know, let's say for a larger tournament like UK or Worlds, where there's 300-400 players, and you go in and you're looking at the top 8, and that's great, but the top 2 lists for that in the Swiss that went 6-0 or 7-0 might not be even represented in that top 8. So look, be sure to look at the Swiss as well, because the Swiss, you got to be able to make the cut before you can even advance through the cut. So that's something to look at as well. Other things you want to look at is just really practice your practice the matchups, not just what you're going to fly. Don't look at those as what you want to choose to fly, but also practice against them. Get your friends at your store to fly against, you know, ask them specifically. I mean, we do that. We sometimes go on our local gold, Pastimes Gold Squadron chat and say, hey, I'm trying to practice against swarms. Is somebody willing to come and bring a swarm? And then we set up games that way. Some of the things that you can potentially do is practice on your own. I think that's one of the things I've mentioned it like 3 or 4 times before, because that's really, I thought, you know, what got me over that initial hump is just practicing on your own. Like, don't worry about, you know, I even 2 weeks ago, I think I mentioned it, like play against, you know, just play both sides of the table, set up the matchups, especially if there's certain games that you think like, I think I'm going to lose this, joust, just set it up on the table against yourself and play that joust. So, and just get those repetitions, and then also just move your ships around, set your formation. If you're playing in formation, set yourself up in 3 or 4 different formations and just fly around the board. See, you know, one of the things that takes a while that the veteran players might not need to do, but to get to that point, you might need to do it, is just practice those. Like, if you set them up at one, you know, at whatever distance in between, if you do a 1 bank, 2 bank, 3 bank, do they make it or do they clip? You said play with ourselves. I did say play with yourself, and all pun intended, and no pun intended at the same time. So, just practice. That's really, and the main thing to remember is really just I wrote that down as reps, triggers. One of the things that'll get you is, again, throw in some reps. Reps, not just playing the game, but also reps in understanding, like, is a 3 hard going to make it over that obstacle or not? And also just remember your triggers. And the more you play, you develop muscle memory, and you won't forget those triggers when you need them. It really broke my heart last week when Bobby forgot to reroll Boba. That happens.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, just remember those triggers. And one of the ways to remember those triggers is just more reps. The more reps you do it, when your mind, when you fatigue and you're in that, you know, 11th, 12th game of the tournament, you're just going to remember, because it's muscle memory. It's just like any other workout. It's just like any other activity. Once you're done, you're playing on pure instinct. And if you put enough reps in, your instincts are going to kick in and you're going to remember that stuff. So I don't know if you want to, I think anything above that, it's, and some of that even is, it's what you do at veteran, like what we're calling veteran level, but.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. And Ryan, all right. That veteran level, getting to those people who are flirting with the cut, what should they be doing?
So as kind of mentioned before, practice multiple openings with your list. I think the best tool with that is Vassal, because the undo button is much, much faster than backing things up if you want. A lot of the best type of practices for openings, and not just openings, but openings that follow through to the first engagement. You want to get to that first engagement point, talk with you and either analyze yourself if it's just you, or talk with you and your practice partner to see how each of you could have set up your openings better to get yourself a better first engagement, and just rewind it back to the beginning and just start over. So a lot of the best practice isn't an entire game. It is just getting to the best first engagement possible, because a lot of times the best first engagement will snowball the rest of the match. Practice and strategize against meta matchups and bad matchups for your list. So, like, find those barometer matchups that you're going to expect that you feel like are 50-50 pushes, see how you can make them more in your favor, and find those bad matchups and see how you can find that one strategy, that one trick or the situation you get yourself into to find a way to get yourself a victory. Try games where you have or don't have first or second, you know, swap first and second player in matchups. See how much that changes. What can you do? What wrinkle can you add to your strategy that takes advantage of the player that you are? Not just say, oh, well, I brought aces, I'm first player, I am SOL. And don't think that way, because someone will always have a bigger bid than you unless you are the crazy person with a 34-point bid.
Real thing. Real yes. thing.
David Kelly, right?
Looking at you, David Kelly.
And then work on your asteroid setup and obstacles. Not only just picking what's best, also look at the meta. Through a lot of the previous meta, I was very high on debris because of the amount of full throttle and fine-tuned controls from the Jedi that disallowed that, and I was not allowing them to get that free rain effect. Look at gas clouds, look at rocks. Like, what gives you that advantage against Boba right now? He actually doesn't care too much about debris if Slave One gets him out of a bad spot. So maybe rocks are better. But then you don't want to give up rocks to the Separatists. So maybe you bring medium rocks to give Boba a little bit of effect, but not all the room possible with small rocks. Is a mix better for people who play any aileron ships? You like gas clouds? Maybe you don't want to give up the defensive bonus for gas clouds to other ships. So try both advantages and disadvantages of not only the type of rock, but placement. Put yourself in the spot where, like, all right, I'm used to being given first player because I have a couple of higher initiative ships, but I don't have a bid. So put yourself in a spot where now they've taken first player and they're placing the first and the second rock. Because a lot of times, as a Separatist player, for example, you generally have at least two of the rocks to choose where to make your little nest for struts, unless your opponent takes first player, which is actually, if there's no initiative overlap, is a very good choice to control the board. So both set up with advantage and disadvantage and see how you can find the area of engagement that still benefits you, even though the rocks or asteroids are not in your favor.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, next thing I want to talk about is, in order to set up yourself for success for a tournament, you got to make sure that you bring everything with you that you might need. And this might seem obvious, but of course, all your game components and that one thing you always forget. You know, I know for myself that one thing I usually, like, not anymore, but one thing for a long time I kept forgetting was my damage deck. Because it would be something like, I would be at home getting all my things ready, and the one thing I'd forget, just like trying to put a tournament together, tournament kit, was like my damage deck. All right. Caused me a couple issues a couple times, but I know people who sometimes they forget dials, they forget their tokens, they'll forget their templates. We're human, mistakes happen. Just go over everything, what I've done for myself, and I made myself a little list. And every time I'm going to play a tournament, which is very rare, I know. You get Dion plays in tournaments, just local ones now, because I'm busy, you know, just doing the good work for you guys. But yeah, make yourself a little list. Make sure you go through the checklist of everything you need. And then on top of that, one very basic thing I like to recommend is some type of game tray. There's so many options out there. We got 3D printed versions. So for instance, like the ones from District Foundry you've seen, but we've showed off some other ones that are 3D printed. You also got wooden ones. And at the very basic level, a cardboard box. I've seen people use card boxes. I've seen people use the core set box, and you put some tape on the window of the core box. That way, you have something to carry around. I think Will still uses a core box. if I'm not mistaken, and just carries everything inside there. And the idea is during a tournament, you don't want to, especially so that you can, we talked about earlier, you want to get to your table on time. You don't want to be disassembling and reassembling your ships every time, but you want to be able to carry them in some type of safe manner. A tray will allow you to lay down your ships or stand them up and have some type of mechanism that holds your ships in place, has your dials in there, your cards, and after each game, you place everything in your box and you carry it to your next table, or you're carrying it to pairings and then to the next table. Just being able to have everything together, have a routine, making sure that you just have all the components you need with you. Some type of game tray, I think, is really, really important. And I'm going to start kind of peeking into the next category, which is going to be practical human things that we got to think of to be successful for a tournament. But if you need a water bottle, or you should have one, or if you're planning on bringing a water bottle, any type of snacks, of course, you need to bring those things with you as well. Now, let's just go ahead and jump into the practical things, practical human things. Marcel, what are a couple of practical human things we got to think about to make sure that we're successful in a tournament?
Well, you mentioned the water. Definitely bring some water. One of the things to keep in mind is, at least this has happened twice to me already, is if they allow outside drinks, and sometimes they consider water an outside drink. Mm-hmm. So at LVO, for example, they were making people either throw their bottles away or drink their water before they went into the venue. So just keep that in mind. However, they were letting people bring in like those
cooler, refillable.
Yeah, the refillable ones. So water, bring in some snacks. You may or may not have time to eat, or depending on the venue, food is always a question mark. So bring something to snack. Again, just something to keep your energy levels up, whether it's granola bars or whatever it is. Just bring something to snack on. Make sure you get plenty of rest the night before if possible. It's not always possible, either because you're hanging out with friends or sometimes you just have like that anxiety. So I mean it is what it is. But if you are gonna have that, at least have something to counter it, whether you if you're a monster drinker, if you're a coffee drinker, or just take some of those little 1 hour shots or 3 hour power shots or whatever they're called. Just be ready to get a kick of something, or sugar if you like sugar for giving you that energy. It's a long day. Sit when you can. So if you don't always have to be intense, make sure, you sit down between rounds. Even if you don't feel like going to the restroom, go to the restroom between rounds, because you don't want to have to go, 30, 45 minutes into the match. So just make sure, you take advantage of the breaks, even if you don't need it, drink water, go to the restroom, eat something, even if just preemptively ahead of time. Know your body. I know I personally have, certain things I got to deal with, mm-hmm. physically, and I know what that means for me. I have a medical condition, so I need to get up about an hour and a half early, and I need to get to the venue about 30 minutes early. I know that for a fact because I have stuff that I need to deal with. So know your body and have that stuff ready, and just wear something comfortable. Two things about wearing something comfortable. One of them is, I started taking off my shoes and after I went to Euros last year, and it's actually really helpful. It makes me feel like get calm. It makes me feel connected to it just makes me feel like I'm playing in the kitchen table at home. So, I've been loving it. And I do that, at most tournaments, and it helps get my angst down, gets me more calm, and it makes me feel more at home. However, that leads to the next point, hygiene. So
ding, 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 ding.
So if you're taking your shoes off, or if you're just being there all day, or if you're somebody who perspirates a lot, you sweat a lot, bring an extra thing of wash. If you're going to be taking your shoes off, make sure you throw some little extra of that talcum powder in there, foot powder. You don't want to be,
you don't want to be that person.
you don't want to be that person. And you know, most of the time, you know, like what that means for you. Like each person has different things that you need to take care of ahead of time.
You know, so, Marcel, you just gave me, I just got inspired. I'm going to literally write a note up here. I'm going to reach out to a deodorant company for a sponsorship. Totally doing it.
Yeah. You know, make sure it's a sport, because after 8 or 10 hours of standing up, it is a sport. So it's got to be, yeah. Do it.
If any of you work for, let me tell you, the one I use that like changed my life. I was like, because this is like a really practical thing we're talking about, guys. I use Dove Men Plus Care is the brand. I use the green one. I don't even know what the scent is named, but it's not just a deodorant. It's also antiperspirant, both in one, and it's amazing. It works. It does actually work for 24 hours. You got those days. I've told you guys about them where I have to go like land a plane to an event and go to work, and I'm still smelling good. So, yeah. Anyway, you got to make sure you're taking care of your hygiene. Yeah, for sure.
If you write down sponsorship things, also put in some insults in there as well.
Yes. Well, actually, that's what I actually wanted to kind of go off of your like, just kind of knowing your body. I know for myself, I have really bad feet and bad hips. So like I wear medically made insoles for my shoes that I have to get specially made every couple of years, and they go in every pair of shoes I ever wear. And the shoe itself also matters. So just making sure that you're comfortable. And if you're going to be barefoot, or not barefoot, socks, please just. Please,
socks,
at least
socks.
Have socks.
No barefoot. You don't want to get like athlete foot or something. Like, yeah, you don't know what's down there. You can throw the socks away, buy new ones.
That's
you
right.
Can throw your feet away. Yeah. Or bring some flip flops. You know, like just mm-hmm. something that makes you feel at home. You know,
yep.
Bring your bunny slippers. Whatever. Just bring something. You know, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna buy some. We got some panda slippers. I'm gonna take some panda slippers.
There you go.
So that'll be it.
And then when it comes. Go ahead, Brian.
So, throwing it out there, if we could get an Old Spice sponsorship, that'd be awesome, because I would want to have the community submit their best Old Spice commercials, because those are always the most ridiculous ones, whether it's the Terry Crews one or the guy that's like, look here, look at me, now it's there, now it's gone, like that guy.
Yep. I'm in. I also want to roll back to hydration and snacks. Now, most of us are adults who are listening to the podcast, but I cannot emphasize the idea of like if you're drinking stuff for hydration, drink water. It really does make a huge difference. I know pop is tasty, or soda, whatever you want to call it, soda, soda pop, whatever feels good. And juices and all that. Like they have their place under the sun for sure. But the most efficient thing you can drink at an event, you're standing around for 12 hours, drink water. Trust me, it makes a huge difference. And when it comes to snacks, this is also part of the whole know your body thing. Eat things that you know are going to settle well in your stomach. I know I have a sensitive stomach. If you've ever hosted me or gone to places where we eat together, you know I eat super plain. And that's because I know my body. I got to make sure I'm staying safe so that I can make sure I'm commentating with you guys all those games and not stuck in the bathroom. But, you know, you got to remember the human side of having to be at an event for so long. Just making sure that you're taking care of yourself. Ryan, was there anything else you wanted to roll into there that you could kind of think of?
So a lot of it was pretty covered, but I think a small thing that can help, obviously, carry all that stuff with you, the water bottle, the snacks, find one of those small drawstring style or small packs, because, you know, you're already carrying your X-Wing stuff in a tray, and sometimes your game is one of the last ones to end. You got to quickly put that stuff all together, and if you got a water bottle out there and you're trying to get some food, like you either your pockets are full and it's like cumbersome to walk around, or your hands are just full all the time and you're just asking for a disaster with dropping something. So get a small pack that you are willing to bring with you around the event, not just leave in your car.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you guys are gonna kill me here. I have to do it. You know, something like a Gold Squadron podcast embroidered backpack.
Gold Squadron podcast. Like I planned it.
Nice. GoldSquadronPodcast.com. All right.
How big is that pack, though? I haven't seen it physically.
I'll grab it. It's pretty good size. You could definitely fit snacks. Let's see. Will my cord reach? It's right there. Can I reach it?
Reach. Don't knock things off.
Not knocking things off. Wait, wasn't it here? Or is it? It might be in the kitchen.
So that pack might be a little bit on the larger side. Than
it is a little bit large.
Something I'm more familiar with. So smaller than a school backpack, but bigger than a purse size?
This is, I would say this is considered a small backpack.
Okay.
Small B-pack.
Yeah, nothing yeah, crazy something small.
I like the idea of drawstring bag. That's what I usually carry around for snacks and stuff, is a drawstring bag. Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Like, do what you can to make those snacks as nutritious or as filling as you can. I choose Clif Bars myself, the trail mix style. Just to make sure that, like, it's probably going to be like a replacement for my breakfast or lunch in case, like, I don't have time on the break because, you know, maybe one of the last people to finish their game before the lunch break, there's only a little bit of time. Like, if you got time, go get actual food. Still do that. Don't always rely on your extra snacks to fill you up unless your actual snacks might already be more healthy than the real food over at McDonald's or Taco Bell.
Agreed.
Healthy life choices.
Absolutely. Well, guys, so these are just honestly, this is just scratching the surface, just some of the things to think about to make yourself successful for a tournament. We're going to do question of the week and list of the week here. But before we do that, there's something I want to have an open discussion with my guys here, Ryan and Marcel. So for Adepticon, I know we've been talking about the like GSP party thing, and I was going through options. People are like, "Oh, we want good food. We want to be able to hang out at a place." Would it just make more sense just have a meetup place at a restaurant? Is that just the right choice?
What do you guys think? Is the restaurant prepared for that many people?
Oh, hey, that ain't my problem. That's the restaurant's problem.
It might be our problem if they don't let us all in.
You're right. I mean, of course, I would contact them and be like, "Hey, could you hold X number of people?" I don't know how many people that would be.
Well, that's the thing. How many people?
Yep. Because I mean, there was a pizza place we went to after one of the Adepticon days last year that some of the Pittsburgh guys, the OCX guys, went to. It seemed to accommodate a large amount of people, but I don't recall how the prices were, if they were like really good or budgetable for you. And I don't know if there's like a large Pizza Hut or, you know, somewhere that actually has space, you know?
Right. Just this, some, one of the ideas is kind of popping to what?
Chuck E. Cheese.
Chuck E. Oh my God. GSP at Chuck E. Cheese. No, they wouldn't let
that's
bunch of adults.
That's only going to go bad.
what are my odds to win this game? Anyway, just some food for thought there. Ah, food. Anyway, question of the week. Question of the week comes from Jedi Oswald. And it is one that when I saw it, I got a little triggered. And I was like, you know what? This is a great discussion point, because I'll give my answer pretty quickly. The question was, what is one thing you miss from first edition that you would like back in second edition? And let me note here how I want this question to be answered, okay? I don't consider this a valid answer. I don't consider, like, I used to be able to do X thing, which was, you know, in the game. And, like, some broken thing. Like, I don't think you guys would say this. But, like, don't be like, that TLT. Like, of course. Like, I don't think that is a good way to go about.
Chat's already saying it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that's the right way to go about this this question. I'm thinking maybe more thematic or maybe more, like, pilot abilities-esque thing. Trying to stay away from the reasons why we have a second edition. Let me put it that way. For me, honestly, right now, I can't say that there's something from first edition where I'm like, man, I really wish I was in there. Like, when I first saw this question, I was like, I ain't answering that question. I was like, wait, my emotional reaction means I probably should. But right now, there isn't anything that if I was stretching it, and I thought about it a little longer, I thought about Tycho. If you guys aren't familiar with that pilot, Tycho, he's one that he could basically just do actions even while stressed. So people would just end up with like 40 stress on this A-wing. But then, of course, my more practical mind says, well, that could be a problem, like a bad precedent for the game, just being able to stack up negative tokens and they not have an effect. So that worried me a little bit. If it's confined to a single pilot, then maybe, but that's where I am. Feel free to jump in whenever you guys want.
So I'll give you two. One of them I'll give you is, and actually both of these are community created cards. So the first one is Boba Fett, the old Boba Fett, which is if you land a critical, you may spend this card, you may flip this card over, basically get rid of this card in order to also get rid of one of your opponent's upgrade cards. I think I love that, and I love the thematic, and that was created by Paul Heaver. That was one of the cards that he created for, I think, Winning Worlds. And I like the thematics of it, of basically having scum and villainy, like having a bounty hunter going in and, you know, you lose your bounty hunter, but he goes in and he steals something from the ship. And now, you know, being able to take that critical upgrade that they have and getting rid of that. So I miss that mechanic. I used to love that mechanic. I wish we had that mechanic back in some shape, way, or form. And the second one is another community created one, or not FFG created one, which is what was it called? I don't even remember it.
You're trying to remember your card?
Yeah, I don't even remember what it's called.
Vector thrusters.
Thrust corrector.
Thrust corrector.
No, thrust corrector. You're right. You're right. You're right.
Only legal in the game for like 6 weeks. Like they came out with my card. And then 6 weeks later, it was like 2.0.
You were the bridge into second edition. You were, you were royalty.
I feel cheated. But I actually do like the ability. I think that ability might be still be useful, which was essentially, you may take a stress if you're not stressed, you may take a stress to add an evade. So it's basically just giving you like one free evade in exchange for a stress once per turn. So, you know, things like that. And there's a bunch of them. I definitely, you know, you want to get rid of all the broken stuff. As much as I love veteran instincts and expert and the expert, whatever, the one that give you the plus one, minus one.
Adaptability?
Yeah, adaptability. You know, those were good to use because, you know, they were broken. So don't bring those back. TLT is broken. Don't bring that back. You know, expertise. Everybody used to love expertise.
Oh my God.
Now it's called the Force. They just changed. They just renamed it.
The Force is better.
Yeah, the Force with hate, especially. That's literally expertise. Or Luke Skywalker.
But the difference is that they have adjusted the points for that. Those Force users are more expensive because they have that. And that's what balances it out.
That was an equivalent to an 8-point upgrade because it was 4 points back then. So it was equivalent to 8 now, which is the same as Perceptive Copilot. Gives you 2 focuses. Also, that card that you take a stress and then the whole turn, all your focuses are...
Glitter Stem,
there you go. Actually, I would like Glitter Stem back for the thematic, if they readjusted the phrasing a little bit, which would be like, lets you turn one focus result to a hit or one focus result, you know, something like that, instead of being just like a full out glitter sim. But I liked everything that came along with saying like, hey, I'm bringing a bunch of drunks with me. You know, again, the thematic stuff, the scummy thematic.
Sure.
Things.
I get it. What about you, Ren?
So, there's a certain X-Wing pilot that I think would be interesting to bring back. Wes Janson. After you perform an attack, you may remove one focus, evade, or blue target lock from the defender.
So that would be for anybody who's second edition only, that would be or break a lock.
Yes. So break, so it's basically like he has a limited jam. I mean, they could adjust it to say removes green tokens or removes a lock type thing, which would be more powerful, obviously. And you can adjust his, you know, initiative level and where he lies in that scale, I5, I4, I6 would be pretty powerful, probably too powerful. I think it'd be cool. Just like another type of old Tarok available for the Rebels. Since Rebels don't have any, not any, but much access to jam anyway. So
I think it's just the shuttle, like the Sheathapede. Does that have jam on it?
No.
No.
We'd have to go through it, but there's not a ton of jam in Rebels. Probably the best access to jam is just putting K2SO crew on.
Truth.
So yeah, I think Wes Jansen would be an interesting addition. I was kind of surprised to not see him. And then I kind of like a lot of those one-off talents that you can only use once. Adrenaline Rush, Cool Hand, Lightning Reflexes. Lightning Reflexes probably the most. It's after you execute a white or green or now blue maneuver on your dial, you may discard this card or probably flip a charge to rotate your ship 180, then receive one stress token after the check pilot stress step. And they can modify it as necessary to make it as balanced as they want to. But just more of those one-use talents, used to be called elite talents or elite upgrades. Cool Hand was when you would receive a stress, you may discard this card to assign a focus or evade token to your ship. Adrenaline Rush, when you reveal a red maneuver, you may discard this card to treat that maneuver as white until the end of the activation phase. So just one shot, one charge use talents that, you know, they used to be 1 point in previous edition, but, you know, adjust them as necessary because now some of them are probably legit powerful in some cases. And yeah, I think it'd be cool to bring them back.
Cool. Very, very practical. I like that. I like that. All right. I know, man, you know there's people in their car being like, bring back Miranda! No! Not the way, not the old way.
Miranda is here.
I mean, she is here.
She's not
make her the work. Miranda. Make her as good as she was.
No.
Strezra! Lori!
Cool. People yelling, bring back our, who was it? Hold on.
R3A2?
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Bring back Zach Matthews' favorite droid.
Oof! All right, I gotta relock all those things away. Put it away. All right, everybody, let's go ahead and hit some list of the week. We got three lists today. We had four prepared, but since Will isn't here, we don't have a fourth person. But then we're also going to do something a little bit new. Somebody presented us with two different lists and said, "Pick one." And I was like, "Oh, that's interesting." So we're going to do a GSP picks segment after the list of the week. So Marcel, we're going to start with you. This list comes from Daniel Ktus 28. It's a hyperspace list for the Republic. And the list is Obi-Wan Kenobi with R5 Astromech and CLT. Ahsoka with Battle Meditation, R5 Astromech and CLT. And 2-7 Squad 7 veterans. Those are the Initiative 3 ARC 170s. And he says, my idea with this list to vary a little that the Jedi are not the center of the list and have two generic I-3s along with Ahsoka with Battle Meditation to be able to coordinate the two and have shots with double modifications and have Obi-Wan Kenobi as a flanker. Marcel, how would you tweak this? What would you do?
Sure. I actually like this list a lot. I'm going to change it because that's what we do here. We change it. But I probably wouldn't. I mean, I think it's fine the way it is. I wouldn't make any significant changes. I think if you leave it just as is, based on what you want to do, it's going to work just fine. But since we are changing it, so I'm going to do something a little bit. Let me see if that fits. Nope, that doesn't fit. So we'll just do something a little bit different. So take, you know, he said he does not want to make Obi-Wan, or actually he does not want to make Jedi the center of the the main portion of the list. What he wants to do is he wants to make the arcs the center of the list. So let's do that. Let's take out, anytime you have Obi-Wan in the list, that's the automatically it's an Obi-Wan list. If that makes any sense. Like, just if you have, if you're trying to build a TIE fighter list, but you have Boba Fett in there, it's a Boba Fett list now. It's not a TIE fighter list anymore. So let's take Obi-Wan and let's drop him down to a Jedi Knight. Initiative 3 Jedi Knight. Yeah, make him nice and generic. Let's take Ahsoka. Let's drop her to a generic. There we go. All right, now put Battle Meditation also on the Jedi Knight. And put Dedicated on both. And then put Veteran Turret Gunner on both.
Veteran Tail Gunner?
Yeah, that one. The one that lets you shoot twice if you're in the right position for it. All right. So basically what that's doing, it's now it's truly making the arcs. All of them are initiative 3. It's truly making the arcs the cornerstone of the list. They're all generic. So with Battle Meditation, what Battle Meditation lets you do is if you coordinate a ship, as long as it is either a non-unique ship or it also has Battle Meditation, you may coordinate two of them, and two of them may take an action. So in this way, out of both actions from both Jedis, you can pass off a total of 4 actions. And then you get your 2 actions from your Arc 170s. So it's a total of total potential of 6 actions that you can take with this particular list. So at 6 actions, the veteran Turret Gunner gives the arcs a little bit of push, a little bit of more oomph, and also the dedicated, as we saw in the, was it the UK? That the dedicated list made it pretty far. But yeah, dedicated basically says if you're in one of the side arcs, you can, the ship that has dedicated can take a strain in order to let a friendly ship reroll. And keep a friendly ship alive. So, anyway, I think this will be fun, and especially all of them being initiative 3, it lets you choose the movement order, so that you're always giving yourself the best opportunity to actually get actions, because this is intended to be an action. A list that has a lot of action efficiency. So in order to do so, you can't be bumping yourself. So this is a good way to guarantee that at least one of your ships gets actions. And if that one ship happens to be a Jedi, that multiplies.
Awesome. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our next list. Next list comes from The Wizard. It is a resistance list, and Ryan's going to take it here. Pretty much he didn't give us a prompt, so I'm just going to go ahead and read it for you. It says, this is ZZ Tolo in the RZ2 A-Wing with Heroic, Covenel with Heroic and Leia Organa crew, Car Koon with Heroic, R4 Astromech and integrated S-Foils, and then in the Fireball, we have Kaz with Heroic, Coaxium Hyperfuel, Advanced Slam, and Kaz's Fireball title. Ryan, take it away.
So the composition is pretty solid in terms of the chassis themselves and most of the name pilots within here in terms of your quality four ship resistance. ZZ is probably one of, if not the strongest A-Wing. Greer's arguable just with his ability and so efficient. Kova, really strong as one of the four ships. Kaz is making plays as being very efficient, just saying, hey, I am 3 attack, 3 agility with more health than most 3 attack, 3 agility ships at my price cost. I'm going to generally just be efficient. And then a solid name T-70. What I'm going to switch it to is based upon probably I'm not a big fan of Cara Koon, like the free Daredevil's kind of cool. But I think we can make ZZ better, make Kaz a little bit cheaper and still effective, and people might cry that they're going to lose a lot of their heroics, but don't need them that much. So First, we're going to take heroic off everything first. And we're going to take R4 off of Carcoon. Because probably not as necessary. I mean, it's cool that you gained a 2-turn blue, but that's the only thing you've gained. So that isn't as necessary. And then we're going to take Advanced Slam off of Kaz and Kaz's Fireball for now and see the points available. So that should allow ZZ put on Advanced Optics. ZZ's really efficient with that. Add some better offense and get the defensive token back. And then we are going to change Carcoon to Teeman Wexley. Really effective flanker, actually, with a lot of health. A lot of people may misuse ZZ. I think ZZ is not actually a flanker. ZZ's really good at getting in the mix and messing with your opponent's target priority. ZZ's difficult to kill if the opponent does not have enough shots at ZZ. And then Kaz, we're going to put R5 Astromech on him to make sure, just say at the beginning of the game, you know what, we're just going to say, hey, I'm actually 6 health. Even though my ship ability said it was going to be 5, I'm just going to use a charge right at the beginning as my first action to get rid of that card and be 6 health, 3 attack, 3 agility.
I mean, right there, you're getting a whole upgrade at a discount.
Exactly. Plus
another ability later.
Yes. And you got 2 points left. So you can use that wherever you want. You can do a couple heroics, say on ZZ and probably Teeman or Kova, your choice. You can put R4 Astromech on Kova, which can be really clutch if you have that 1 turn you're already dialing in with Kova anyway. That frees up Leia to be used on Kaz for his Talon rolls or his 4 straight. Or ZZ can do a white 3-sloop or 5K. Teeman can do a 4K or 3-sloop and still proc his abilities. I'd kind of lean towards that. If you don't see yourself doing it that often, you can take Kaz's Fireball and say, you know what? I'm going to take a direct hit out of my deck completely. Just going to say, hey, I'm going to pull a direct hit, and R5 is going to fix it immediately. It's going to be gone. I'm never going to have to worry about it.
Very cool. All right. And then our last list of the week here comes from Kirkles. It is a hyperspace list, he said here. I don't know why that said extended. There we go. Hyperspace list. And he says, I want to get a hyperspace list going that focuses on the TIE X1 and trying to lean into the mechanic that exposes damage cards. So he wants to play with some crits here. Now, he also says that he has some ties in there for blocking, and he keeps waffling between Zertik Strom and Ved Foslow, along with a couple other things. He says, I'm terrible at the end. So we're going to try here, Kirkle. Now, I'm going to go ahead and read you guys the list, and then we'll start making some tweaks. So Zertik Strom currently with passive sensors and concussion missiles, Merrick Steel with fire control system and Mag Pulse. Mag Pulse was the full name. Warheads. Vizier in the TIE Reaper with Death Troopers and 2 Academy pilots. So one of the things, I'm going to kind of work backwards through your thing, Kirkle. One of the things you said here was having an Academy TIE Fighter in there for blocking. A couple of them. While I like the idea there, TIE Fighters are okay at blocking. I think Reapers are better at blocking, and they have 3 attack die. So one of the first things I did was delete one of these TIE fighters, and I changed this one into a striker. Sorry, did I say Reaper earlier? Anyway, sorry, a striker. I know it's more expensive, but it has a little bit more utility. So initiative 1, striker in there. Then looking at Zertik Strom, and let's go ahead and read that ability there. It says, during the end phase, you may spend a lock on an enemy ship to expose one of its damage cards. I like the idea there. I think the concussion missiles are a little bit extra, though. We're going to get rid of concussion missiles. Then you have Merrick Steel, who allows you to, after you've dealt a crit, in order you can go ahead and deal 3 of them. You pick which one you want to give. And then after that as well, looking at Merrick Steel, I like Mag Pulse, but for the purposes of what I want to do here, I'm going to pull that out as well. Then looking at Vizier's ability, which says after you fully execute a speed one maneuver using the adaptive aileron ship ability, you may perform a coordinate action. If you do, skip your perform action step. Interesting ability. One of the issues I have with Reapers, though, when trying to use ranged abilities is that because they move a lot faster than these small base ships, sometimes you might even find yourself outside of that 0-2 zone. Reapers can also be used as blockers. I really like Death Troopers on there for the 0-1 for your enemy. So what I actually want to do is go ahead and take Vizier and... that's because I was messing with an extended. That's why. Oh, no. What I wanted to do doesn't work. Panic. Okay. Well, we'll figure it out from here. All right. So what we're going to do, we're actually going to get rid of the Planetary Sentinel and say, you know what? You don't need a blocker. You're fine. But you know what we're going to give you? We're going to give you another TIE Advanced. And you could actually just go ahead and get Ved Voslo in the list as well. You have passive sensors set up. And we have space now for a couple of talents if we want them. There isn't really anything too great and extended for Empire. Empire is not great in hyperspace.
Oh, look. I wonder why it didn't show up that much.
That's right. I have 11 points left over. Can I just go Vader?
I was going to say, how close are you to Vader? Can you knock like Zyrtec or Merrick down to a Tempest to get Vader?
So, yes. He's talking about exposing damage cards. You know, you want to be spending that lock for the attack. So, I'm going to say you get rid of Zyrtec. You go down to a Tempest. That gets you 7. Oof. So close.
Yet so far away.
Yet so far. Can't quite get Vader. Can't quite get Vader. I'm so sad.
I mean, you can, but you are changing the squad drastically.
Completely changing the squad. So we'll go back to the striker here. And you know what? We're just going to get you a second striker. You're back to 2 blockers right there. So you got a Tempest with passive sensors in order to make sure that you're setting up that lock early. Merrick is initiative 5. You'd probably be able to just lock as the action with fire control system. You got Vizier with Death Troopers and 2 planetary sentinels in order to set up those blocks. So Kirkles, hopefully you enjoyed that. We had another list that was submitted by Alan C98, a rebel list. We'll go ahead and do that one next week. But what time it is now, it is time for you guys to let us know how you thought we did with list of the week. Which list did you like the best? But while we do that, I want to also submit the this is not official, but we have on Discord a X-Wing meme review page where you can post in there. Now, most people just post Star Wars memes, which there's so many. It's really hard to get a good X-Wing meme, and I came across one I really like. So I'm going to go ahead, pull it up here. Ryan, you can go ahead and read it to them and try to explain what's happening for people who are just listening. I'll go ahead and pull that up right there while I get this ready.
Product placement.
All right, I'll wait for it. All right, so... got my entire squad shoots at one ship, all with locks focus, opponent ship. As you can see, I am not dead. So yeah, there's situations where that happened and you're like, you have everything set up, everything's good to go, it's all perfect, you are going for the kill, and they don't die, and you're just like, well, I'm here.
AKA Dion's stream dice. Max variance.
I always feel like that when I do a resistance list, I take out heroics and I just don't get votes for that ever.
You either have to have heroic or it's the resistance.
I left them with 2 optional points. They can take 2 heroics if they want.
It's all or none, brother.
Dion, are you potentially muted? One of our listeners says you're muted.
Oops. I was muted there. So sad. Was I muted for that entire thing?
Yes.
Let's see. How far does that go back? I think just maybe when it dealt with you putting up the numbers for the voting. That's the first time I see someone say Dion muted.
Okay, cool. Hopefully. All right, so now we're going to go ahead and it looks like we're tied right now. We'll leave that in there. List of the week. Then this one we're gonna do together, guys. Okay, no competition here. So this comes from the Magic Notes. Got it. Oh man, I didn't put a name here. Sorry, buddy, who submitted thing. I don't have your name, so we're just gonna roll with it. He submitted two lists, right here, two Republic lists. And said, pick one. So the first list, he has Rick Olay with Outmaneuver, Ahsoka Tano with CLT, Plo Koon with CLT, and Obi-Wan Kenobi with CLT. Option number two, he keeps those last two Jedi the same. So Obi-Wan and Plo are the same thing. But now he has still has Rick, no Outmaneuver this time. And now he has Anakin with passive sensors and a proton torpedo. So I'll kind of flip back and forth for the people who are watching at home. And Ryan, I saw you had an initial reaction right away. You're saying list number two. Why is that?
Definitely list number two. Not that list number one is bad. I think three Jedi with CLT is definitely a good option. One, Ahsoka is very efficient, and Rick without maneuver is a little less ignorable. But man, nothing like passive sensors with a force to power a proton torpedo from Anakin. That is really good, and I think that should be one of the staples of Republic four ship list building. He ends up being the most expensive ship in the squad, but as long as you trade well and get the damage you need on the ships you need to kill, it will be worth it for the rest of your ships to clean up.
All right. And what about you, Marcel? What are you thinking?
Are we looking at both of them or just any in particular?
We're picking. We're not changing anything.
We're not just changing. We're just which one do we think is better?
Which one do you like better?
Oh, God.
This is GSP picks, not list of the week. We can't change anything.
I probably think the three Jedi list is more consistent. I think the Anakin list is more heartwarming. It's Baby Addy. And passive proton, so I'll pack a punch. But yeah, I think the three Jedi one is probably going to be more consistent.
All right. So you're voting for list one.
Yeah.
So you put me as the rubber match, right? Trying to figure out which way you want to go. I honestly prefer list two. I like the proton torpedo there, and you still get a couple Jedi, which are really solid, and you still get Obi-Wan. It's an Obi-Wan list, right?
As long as he's in there. It doesn't matter that another ship is more expensive. It's still an Obi-Wan list.
That's right. So that's our GSP picks for the week. I don't know if we'll do that very often. I guess let us know if you guys like that.
I just got to throw something out there. I don't want to sleep on the couch tonight, okay? So in not getting made to sleep on the couch tonight, I got told I got to give props for the making everyone battle meditation so everybody multiplies actions. Kayla's like, that's my list. That's my list. That's what I want to do. So yeah, Kayla, I got that idea from you. Thank you.
There you go.
Can I not be on the couch tonight?
All right, guys. So hopefully you enjoyed our show for today. I'm super excited about this Wednesday. It will be Ty Baron Day. The following Wednesday, we'll be doing Hot Shots and Aces Part 1. Super excited. People seem to really like those thematic versions of League Night. And we'll keep doing it as long as you guys like it, as long as we feel like doing it. It's pretty much what it comes down to when it comes for League Night. Because, of course, we got to get people willing to play. So thank you guys so much for everybody here at Gold Squadron Podcast. Gold Squadron out.